Hambleton Bakery, I've just walked in, and the smell of this bakery is absolutely incredible. It smells of sweet baked pastries and sourdough and wood smoke at the same time.
That's right, yeah.
Gillian, tell me, this is an Ipsil oven you're standing in front of at the moment. Tell me, before we start, tell me a little bit more about this oven.
Yeah, well, when we first opened the bakery, we were looking to find an oven that we could do our bread in a practical way as well as a romantic way, because sometimes it's more than just living the dream. It's about having something that's going to make you some money. So we went around looking for ovens that were more practical. So we flew over to France and we saw a few bakeries using these sort of ovens. It's a rotary oven, which means the bread that you load in the oven at the front, it then becomes... The first bread in is the first bread out. It comes back to the front again. If you can imagine like a big wheel,
yeah.
It means you get a lot more bread in. You don't have to keep opening the door to reload the oven all the time, move things around. So what you've got is a good system of keeping the heat in the oven. And then what you find is that we only spend £14 a day on wood to fire the oven.
That's amazing, just £14.
Yeah, because it's very economical. It's not just about, like I say, living the dream of having this idealistic wood-fired oven. It cooks brilliant bread, first and foremost. That's the reason we chose it. And we saw it in use in bakeries in France and Belgium. It's from Barcelona, but they don't sell any in Spain. They only sell them in France. But, you know, no one makes these things in England anymore. You buy the ones where you can fire them inside. Mm-hmm. And because you fire them inside, you have to flail them, clean them, to make sure that they're all clean inside. And then you can start baking. Then the oven heat falls. With these, you can constantly fire without having to clean out the oven, so you get more bread in.
That's brilliant. That's absolutely fantastic. It's a very even heat. Now, so you're standing with this trolley absolutely laden with sourdough that is proving, and I can smell that beautiful sour smell as you sort of opened it up. Now, these baskets, the dough in them, what stage is it at, and how long has it been there?
The dough takes 48 hours to make it. The stage it's at now is just ready for cooking. It's taken it nearly 8 hours in the basket alone. So to start a sourdough, we feed the starter. The next day we make the dough.
I'm going to stop you there because my listeners are going to wonder, what's a starter?
A starter is wild yeast. If you can imagine, on the outside of a grape, you get a little white powder. That's the starter. That's the yeast. The yeast is just waiting to get inside the skin of the grape and start feeding. That's how they make wine.
Feeding on the sugar.
On the sugars, yeah. And that creates alcohol, which is a bonus. In bread, unfortunately, we cut that off. Yeah. But it creates alcohol and gas, and it's the gas that we're interested in.
So is that gas as the yeast kind of eats the sugar in the flour? That's what makes the bread light, is it?
Yeah, so the yeast is feeding on the maltose. Natural wheat, stone ground wheat, is absolutely packed full of good things and maltose. And the yeast, you know, as soon as you add water, it can then feed on that product.
And the maltose, effectively, is a type of sugar.
It is, yeah, it's exactly what it is. It's a sugar. It's the storehouse in the seed that grows the grain. And it's feeding, you know, normally the grain would feed on that, but the yeast is feeding on it. And so as soon as you start to add water to it, it will eventually begin to ferment. That fermentation is used as a starter for the next dough. So after 24 hours as a starter, which is just flour and water, it then goes made into a dough. And then that dough is then stored for another 24 hours, which is a long fermentation, which we believe in strongly, because it makes it so much more digestible to ferment the whole dough for 24 hours.
So in reality, this sourdough is made entirely of natural yeast that's just come from the air.
Yeah.
And it ferments, because commercial bread is a very quick process and has been systemised into these batches going through to get them very maximum and most out of the factory, whereas here you seem to have this sort of very slow, gentle process.
Yeah.
And you were saying about it making it more digestible.
Yes, when you long ferment something, it actually breaks down the proteins. Even celiacs, although I wouldn't recommend it without trying it, can eat long, long fermented breads like sourdoughs because the proteins are broken down in the long fermentation. If you like, it's partly digested by the bacteria and things which break down the things that you can't digest. So if you take a modern loaf, you can roll it into a ball of dough in the middle, and that sits in your stomach and you cannot digest that. You know, a good bread, you press it and it springs back. You have to chew it, and chewing is part of the digestion. You know, you need to chew to digest things. It doesn't stick to the roof of your mouth like a modern loaf would. You can't leave fingerprints in it.
So this almost digesting in its own right.
In a way, it's starting the digestion
process. And so people who've got quite sensitive stomachs who might not normally be able to eat bread could quite possibly eat sourdough.
Yeah, I mean, in my opinion, modern bread is vented to fit the machinery. So they've designed the bread with chemicals and additives and the way they grow the flour now and things like that. So go through machinery to make bread very cheap. We're very proud in this country of having the cheapest bread in Europe, which we shouldn't be. We should be ashamed of, really, because it's cheap for a reason. It's mostly water and it's awful. Whereas when you produce breads on a much longer, slower process, it actually makes digestion much, much easier. It's how bread should be. You know, we have trouble digesting grains. We have inhibitors in our body that stop us digesting grains. For instance, if you sprout the grains before you actually mill them, they become a vegetable, and it actually means you can take maybe 120% more nutrients out of that flour than you can if the grain hasn't been sprouted, because we have these inhibitors in our body that stop us taking certain things out of grain. Long fermentation breaks that down and means that you can take a lot more out of your flour than you would with a modern loaf, for instance.
I mean, for long fermentation alone is a good reason to eat it, because it's easily digestible. But the taste of this sourdough, I mean, you can taste that sort of... It's sour is the way it sort of smells, yeah. But it's got a sweetness to it as well, hasn't it?
I think what happened in the olden days, people made bread once a week, and that culture was then kept alive, so the sour flavour was much, much stronger. Also, the sourness is lactic acid, which is a natural preservative, so it kept the bread fresh, if you like, the starter fresh.
Talking about natural preservatives, when we're buying commercial bread, there are a lot of enzymes in there. I'm assuming this is completely enzyme-free.
Yes, yeah, we only use good quality flours with no additives, and then we long ferment. By long fermenting, again, you're breaking down any of the natural sort of proteins in there as well. But we don't add anything to our bread. It literally is flour, water, and pure sea salt, because even salt contains anti-caking agents, two types of anti-caking agents, which can have an adverse effect on the yeast.
I was going to say, when you add salt, sometimes salt itself can kill yeast. So I guess, at what point do you add the salt?
Well, we always give it... We make the dough, 20 minutes, we rest it before adding salt. That's called the autolase, which is a way of creating a better elasticy dough using less strong flours, you know, less protein, stretchy flours. But by adding... Obviously, salt stops the flour absorbing that water. So what you're doing by adding the salt later is you're allowing that water to soak into the flour and draw out the proteins that you need from things like rye and that. You really need to work hard to get it. But you can imagine yeast is a bit like us. It needs warmth, it needs food, it needs oxygen, and those are the things that make it grow. And you know, so getting the perfect temperature is body temperature to grow yeast. It's very similar to us in many respects. You know, it likes the same things, really: good food, and oxygen, and light, and also most importantly, warmth. Just a bit of warmth.
That sounds like there's a batch ready to come out of the oven, right?
Here we are. Oh. This should be just coming out now. They only take, because the oven's on 300 degrees, you have to bake it for 10 minutes. But
these look absolutely incredible. I'm going to let you take those out of the oven, and I'm going to come back to you in one second.
Thank you.